don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Crypto Economy Quick Read. What is up, Crypto Economy crew? Welcome back to the show. Got another episode today that will be a crypto quick read. In yesterday's crypto chat, when I was listening back to it, there was something that struck me, and I remembered while we were having the conversation with Vijay, that he said something that struck me. I had not actually talked about on the show before, was that the distribution of Bitcoin, Satoshi's means of distributing the coins, was about as fair as it could possibly have been. And I think that's a really important topic, particularly in this day with all the ICOs, the horribly pre-mined cryptocurrencies, and the comparisons and hate to Bitcoin maximalists and long-term holders, and how there's been a lot of discussion lately of how holders are evil or getting unfairly rewarded for, you know, just holding coins, so on and so forth. I think it's a really important topic to hit, and I hadn't hit it yet on the show, and it immediately made me think of an article that I've been sitting on for, you know, a week or two. Another one by Dan Helt. We've read from him on the podcast before, and I think his Twitter handle is just Dan. Yeah, it's just Dan Helt, at DanHeld on Twitter. So obviously I'll link and tag him on Twitter and link to the actual article on his blog.pix.co. It's Picks and Shovels. It's a Medium publication. And it looks like he has a newsletter, too, that I actually was not aware of. So we'll link to all of that so you can check out his work and see his newsletter and Twitter page and all that stuff so you can follow him and also drop some applause for this article because I think it's a pretty good one. It's also not very long, so we should hit this one pretty quick, and I don't want to rant too long. This should be a shorter episode. They've been getting into the 30 minutes and longer more recently. I think my rants have just been going on and on, so I'll try to keep this one short, but I do definitely want to hit a couple of things on this topic. So without further ado, let's hit Dan Held's article, Bitcoin's Distribution Was Fair. Forward. As Bitcoin rises in popularity and continues to challenge mainstream thought, there will be concerns around certain parameters of its existence. One of those is that the distribution of Bitcoin wasn't, quote, fair, particularly in the earlier stages of network development. I'll dive into the timeline surrounding Bitcoin's launch and provide a thorough debunking of unfair early distribution claims. Too long, didn't read? Satoshi set out to design the fairest system possible. Distribution. Pre-mining is the mining or creation of a number of crypto coins before the cryptocurrency is launched to the public. Pre-mining sometimes has a negative connotation due to the ability of private developers to privately mine and allocate a number of coins to themselves before releasing the open source code of the currency to the public. This could lead to a feeling of lack of transparency in the digital currency offered to the public. Satoshi didn't pre-mine. Satoshi gave everyone a 2-month heads up before mining the Genesis block, reaching out to the only other people who would possibly be interested in experimenting with a sovereign digital currency at the time, the cypherpunks, via public email list. The white paper was published on October 31st, 2008. Then Bitcoin 0.1 software was released on January 9th, 2009. The Genesis block alone was minted earlier, January 3rd, 2009. It was unlike all other blocks, no previous block to reference, and required custom code to mine it. Satoshi included a message in the Genesis block as a, quote, proof of no pre-mine. Quote, The Times, January 3rd, 2009, Chancellor on brink of second bailout for banks, end quote. Genesis Block. Timestamps for subsequent blocks indicate that Nakamoto did not try to mine all the early blocks solely for himself. Before Satoshi's invention, the concept of pre-mining didn't exist. To be this prescient demonstrated incredible maturity. The code to mine Bitcoin was available on the day Satoshi began mining, other than the special purpose Genesis block. It even had a one-click miner, so that it was incredibly easy. Once the code was released, several individuals started mining. We know that for a fact that Hal Finney was mining one day after the initial launch. Satoshi definitely wasn't mining alone in the early days, granted, the number participating was still slim. For the first year of Bitcoin's existence, Satoshi and other miners couldn't muster enough hash rate to mine more than 144 blocks a day and trigger an upwards difficulty adjustment. Satoshi mined because the network required a miner. He turned them off when there was a stable network that didn't need his mining power. He reduced his percent of the hash rate in a slow and steady manner. The Satoshi fingerprinted mining carefully balanced the hash rate of the cluster, with the goal of historically viewable, well-meaning intentions. Satoshi initially followed a plan of reducing the hash rate by 1.7 megahash per second every 5 months. But a month after the second such drop, abandoned this method in favor of a continuously decreasing rate. How much did Satoshi mine? Other than a few coins, some still circulating, it's not empirically knowable how many he owned, but we can assign a high probability that he was the miner who minted close to somewhere around 700,000 Bitcoin. BitMEX reviewed the original estimate made by Sergio Damian Lerner, where he discovered that Satoshi's miner had a, quote, fingerprint. The increase in the extra knot's value in the block can potentially be used to link different blocks to the same miner. BitMEX built on his analysis and concluded that although the evidence is far less robust than many assume, there is reasonable evidence that a single dominant miner in 2009 could have generated around 700,000 Bitcoin. Quote, although there is strong evidence of a dominant miner in 2009, we think the evidence is far less robust than many have assumed. Although a picture is worth a thousand words, sometimes pictures can be a little misleading. Even if one is convinced, the evidence only supports the claim that the dominant miner may have generated significantly less than 1 million Bitcoin in our view. Perhaps 600,000 to 700,000 Bitcoin is a better estimate. End quote. BitMEX. Bitcoin's market cap was approximately $0 for nearly a year and a half. Miners were wasting money on hardware and electricity to mine, with no guarantee that the bitcoins they received would ever have value. In fact, faucets were set up to freely distribute Bitcoin in order to seed adoption. For example, the 10,000 Bitcoin faucet set up by Gavin and other Bitcoiners who donated funds. The first recorded exchange of Bitcoin for, quote, real-world value occurred on May 22, 2010. Now known as Bitcoin Pizza Day, where Laszlo Hanyex agreed to pay 10,000 Bitcoins for two delivered Papa John's pizzas. He went on to do this trade two more times, maximizing the dispersion of his coins. Quote, it might make sense just to get some in case it catches on. If enough people think the same way, that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. End quote. Satoshi Nakamoto. The early pioneers were the ones crazy enough to take the financial, temporal, and social risks to participate in the Bitcoin project, keeping it alive and acting as arbiters of the system in its early days. Nearly all lost or sold all of their bitcoins, as evidenced by this analysis done by Dhruv Bansal. With each of these boom-bust cycles, we've seen Bitcoin redistributed from old holders to new holders via selling, decreasing the Gini coefficient. In 2017 alone, we saw 15% of all Bitcoin move out of old holder hands. The theoretical total number of Bitcoin, slightly less than 21 million, should not be confused with the total spendable supply. The total spendable supply is always lower than the theoretical total supply, and is subject to accidental loss, willful destruction, and technical peculiarities. Quote, 10 years ago, cryptographers and HCI experts created the ultimate experiment to see how well human beings could hold on to long-lived secret keys. We structured the experiment so participants would lose hundreds or thousands of dollars if they failed. The results of that experiment have not been pretty, end quote, some cryptographer on Twitter. There are many stories of people losing Bitcoin in large amounts, especially in the early days, when Bitcoin wasn't worth much and was easily forgotten on an old hard drive, USB memory stick, or even a scrap of paper. Coins which remain unspent for greater than 5 years have a high likelihood to be lost forever. Despite the richness of blockchain data, it's extremely difficult to measure how much cryptocurrency is truly lost, as lost coins leave no trace in the blockchain. The problem is that so much Bitcoin which is not lost looks exactly the same on the blockchain. Quote, the study of lost Bitcoin is geology masquerading as data science, end quote. Drove Bansal. Unchained Capital did a great analysis of lost coins and found that Bitcoin loss occurred over two distinct crypto-geologic eras, systemic, earlier miners, and incremental loss, coins lost by individual users gradually over time. Their estimate was between 2.78 and 3.79 million Bitcoin lost, which aligns with another more sophisticated analysis done by Chainalysis. Quote, lost coins only make everyone else's coins worth slightly more. Think of it as a donation to everyone. Satoshi Nakamoto. From private key management mistakes, to scams and exchange hacks, to resisting selling temptation, early holders survived. In compensation for that risk, they absolutely deserve the value appreciation. Some argue Bitcoin's distribution is analogous to a Ponzi scheme, but it's nothing like one. The definition of a Ponzi scheme, quote, a fraudulent investing scam promising high rates of return with little risk to investors. The Ponzi scheme generates returns for older investors by acquiring new investors, end quote. It isn't one for the following reasons. Transparency. Absolutely nothing about Bitcoin is a secret. It's open source. Anyone can review the code. Anyone can contribute to the code. Anyone can run the software voluntarily and participate in the network. And anyone can use the network without permission. The entire history of all Bitcoin transactions is visible to anyone in the world, too. It's the total opposite of a fraudulent investing scam, which is shrouded in vague promises of high returns with capital inflows and outflows that are kept in a secret ledger. Returns. The Bitcoin white paper never mentions an investment or promising high returns. In a Ponzi scheme, the value for early investors relies solely on new entrants coming in with fresh capital, and their earnings and dividends come directly from this capital. With Bitcoin, the opposite is true. Most early Bitcoiners lost or sold their Bitcoin. Bitcoiners are human. They make human mistakes and have human needs, like buying a house. Quote, Bitcoins have no dividend or potential future dividend, therefore not like a stock, more like a collectible or commodity. End quote. Satoshi Nakamoto. Usage. The market's determination of what one Bitcoin is worth has nothing to do with greater fools getting into the system, but an after-effect of its true value proposition, one that it already had even when it was worth nothing. Conclusion. Satoshi was a person like any other, not some infallible being. This was the fairest distribution he could have come up with, given what he was building, its timing, and the audience. It's intellectually dishonest to compare Satoshi's early mining of Bitcoin at a loss with pre-mining of an ICO with a positive market value, or expected positive market value. Quote, Bitcoin benefited from an extremely rare set of circumstances. Because it launched in a world where digital cash had no established value, they circulated freely. That can't be recaptured today, since everyone expects coins to have value. Not only was it fair, but it was historically unique in its fairness. The Immaculate Conception. End quote. Nick Carter. Satoshi wanted to signal to everyone that Bitcoin wasn't a scam. The conservative de-escalation of his mining contributions, his departure from the community, never spending any of his coins, nor using his influence for any purpose, shows that he wanted the world to make up their own mind about his project and judge it on its own terms. Unlike every other founder in history, Satoshi never cashed out. If you enjoyed reading this, please sign up for his weekly newsletter, which contains a too-long didn't-read thoughts on the crypto space over the previous week. You can follow him on Twitter and then check out his other articles. And that's just a little short snippet that he's got at the bottom of the article. I will link to it. I did not actually go over a couple of the graphics that he has. He has the Great Hodl Waves graphic from... who was that done by? That was Dhruv Bansal, I think, who did that. Yeah, Unchained Capital. I think that was from there, I think. But he's got a number of good graphics and referencing from the BitMEX article about trying to determine which coins Satoshi actually mined. So there's a lot of other resources and stuff that you can go digging through if you actually go check out the article. And, of course, drop it some applause. I will link to that. You can find... the whole blog page at blog.pix.co. And of course, again, this was written by Dan Held. So definitely check him out, and I will link to him on Twitter. But this was a really good summation of a lot of the main points. One thing, I want to hit the whole idea about Bitcoin being a Ponzi scheme. And there is absolutely zero practical basis in that statement whatsoever. It's outright flatly false. And as you can see, Daniel does a pretty decent job of just basically hitting the main points of what a Ponzi scheme is, and basically proving that Bitcoin is the opposite of a Ponzi scheme, because none of the elements that make a Ponzi scheme a Ponzi scheme are there. And not only are the elements not there, they're diametrically opposed to what makes a Ponzi scheme a Ponzi scheme. So where a Ponzi scheme is based on hidden ledgers, where new money is directly paid out to old money, Bitcoin could not be more open. Where a early investor in a Ponzi scheme is paid a dividend, where their position in the Ponzi scheme has nothing to do, like they are paid a return without losing or compromising their position in the Ponzi scheme. They are always paid with new entrants to the scheme. Whereas in Bitcoin, you actually have to, like, new money buying Bitcoin does not make you earn anything. You have to sell Bitcoin. You have to give up the value that you are holding and sell it to someone else who is willing to pay for it. There's no unfair payouts. There are only voluntary transactions between one person and another, unless, of course, you get scammed, but that has nothing to do with Bitcoin. There is zero return whatsoever, and there is zero guaranteed return. The idea that there is no risk in Bitcoin, but that Bitcoin is then simultaneously, from most of those same detractors, too volatile and too risky to be a currency, is such a contradiction, it's almost laughable. There's just no basis in calling Bitcoin a Ponzi scheme, and somebody who says that is not interested in knowing or explaining anything. They are literally just saying, whenever you hear that term, Bitcoin is a Ponzi scheme, all you need to know that you're getting out of that is that this person doesn't like Bitcoin. That is what they are saying, and they are tagging in parenthesis, I also don't know anything about it. So that's what Bitcoin is a Ponzi scheme means. I hate Bitcoin, and I don't know anything about it. As Vijay and as Dan Held have both explained in the past, there was no other way to distribute this fairly. And none of it made any sense. You can't airdrop coins that nobody believes have any value. They maintained the network while Bitcoin was worth nothing for a year and a half. And there was no guarantee, none whatsoever, that either A, the system would work. It was a complete experiment. Satoshi even said himself, "I had to code it before I even knew it was possible." You could not have a better example of an experiment with zero guarantees whatsoever as Bitcoin in the early days. And people, the first posts on the mailing list were criticisms, people not understanding how it could work. Or I think the very first response was, "This looks great, but this thing's not going to scale." I think Gavin Andreessen, in one of his early interviews that I watched really early on, back in like 2012, maybe late 2011, he talked about the fact that he constantly was looking at this thing and like, "Oh, well, this isn't going to work because of this." And then he would keep reading and keep looking at the code and he'd be like, "Oh, well, he actually sorted that out." And then he would do it again. He's like, "Oh, well, it's definitely going to fail because of this." It's like, "Oh, well, he actually worked that out." This thing was so... I spent years talking to people who called me stupid and looked at me like I was an idiot for being involved in the project at all. It was literally, it held as much mental value in people's eyes as World of Warcraft gold. It was just fake magic internet money. It was senseless to be involved in it. People looked at you like you were stupid. People called you stupid to your face if you talked about it. I had it happen many times. And what's funny is that they are the people most likely today to hear that it was unfair. When I was telling them about it in 2011, now it's unfair. So it was stupid then. Now it's not fair because they didn't make any money off of it. And it hurts even worse being one of the people who has been here for 7 years and did lose tons of coins, did accidentally mismanage my keys and lost what would have been a world-changing amount of money, or made some stupid purchase for hundreds of Bitcoin that I could never hope to get back. So to tell me that I profited unfairly for the tiny amount that I was able to hold on to while being a believer this entire time is a little bit triggering, but know that none of it is based in any technical reality. They've done no assessment or analysis of how this is. Any attempt to define something more fair always runs into obvious gameable fallacies, or you have other coins that have tried stuff like the airdrop. There was what was that coin in, I think it was Iceland? They were trying to airdrop to every Icelandic citizen, and like nobody claimed their coins. Distribution of it ended up being horrible, and the whole thing, I don't even think it exists anymore. But regardless, I think anybody making those claims or calling Bitcoin a Ponzi scheme, it's rather obvious that those claims are basically based in just resentment. Or, of course, it's just regurgitation of something they heard in a New York Times article or, you know, something similar. But what's most interesting about it is that there still hasn't even been a coin since then that has been distributed as fairly as Bitcoin. Nick Carter said, the Immaculate Conception is it benefited from an environment that can't be recreated, is that it had a $0 price, like I said, for a year and a half. It was worth nothing because people had no concept or no idea that it could be worth anything. So it's a level of open playing field that cannot be recreated by any of the other coins, even if they try to mimic. Like, I think it's a Raven coin, which has had some random explosion of price recently. Raven coin and Bruce Fenton going out of his way trying to make it seem fair in the distribution of the coin tried to do everything as similar to Bitcoin as possible. A public release, a couple of months ahead announcement, all that stuff. But it's still impossible to recreate the conditions because Ravencoin pulled a price out the gate. It became one of the top 100 cryptocurrencies incredibly quickly because people are just excited about the new coin and everybody's practically tripping over themselves trying to get to the next ICO or the coin that's going to be the Google to Bitcoin's Yahoo. The frenzy over new cryptocurrency still is overblown. So when not a single coin can recreate the level of fairness that Bitcoin managed to have in its early days, but to pair that with the tsunami of risk that the earliest holders had and then the deferment of consumption that they had to go through while they watched Bitcoin take 1,000%, 10,000% increases, and to still hold, to still be believers, or people like myself and some very close friends of mine that got burned and lost tons of coins, but stayed believers and continued to accumulate over the years and continue to do so today, in an effort to get back or have some savings and continue to be exposed to the technology. The idea that all of that risk and loss and frustration and dealing with the number of people who've criticized or looked at you like you were an idiot or called you an idiot, and now they're saying it's not fair, it's going to be really, really hard to get anyone to care about what they think. All right. That was a good solid rant. And here I said this was going to be a short one, and we're practically at 30 minutes again. I hope you guys enjoyed that one. That was a really good article by Dan Held, and it was a topic I wanted to hit. Maybe I got a little bit of a butt hurt somewhere in there. I might have a bit of a sore spot with people who, with the years of stress of trying to explain it to people who continuously look down on me, who most everybody was very respectful, and there were only a handful of people who literally did call me stupid or tell me I was going to lose all my money and all that good stuff. And I think a handful of them truly did it out of love. They were concerned for me getting involved in this quote-unquote Ponzi scheme. So it's fun to get that frustration out a little bit in a rant, but in reality, I hold no ill will to people who don't think it's fair. I just hope they do some digging and actually learn about it, because I challenge them to try to come up with something more fair that would actually work in practice, because I honestly can't think of one. Every time I try to come up with something that could seem like a fair distribution, it runs into too many economic problems or fails in major incentives or ends up in the distribution issue. Like if you try to do an airdrop, is nobody's going to value something that nobody values. So it runs into a circular problem of nobody's going to care about it. So thought this was a really good point. Definitely follow Dan Held. He's always got some fun stuff. And a lot of good writing up on his Medium page. I will link to his Twitter and Medium page so that you can check him out. And of course, don't forget to follow me at The Crypto Economy on Mastodon, Twitter, and Medium. If you want to stay up to date and hear all the best crypto articles and discussion, including my rants about any and all topics around Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. And of course, check out cryptoeconomy.life if you would like to support the show. Please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Leave me a review if you're enjoying the show. That does a huge help. On cryptoeconomy.life, you can find my Bitcoin donation address if you want to send me a couple of coins and, you know, buy me a coffee or something. I'm still waiting for my Lightning node to come in the mail. I really hope that comes sooner rather than later. I'm really excited about getting that up and running and having Lightning integrated on the website so I can play around with it. And so hopefully that will be available soon, and I will obviously tell everybody about it when it gets here. And of course, you can also, I now have an affiliate link with Amazon, and I'm just specifically looking for products that I use all the time. I don't really like to advertise for things that I don't believe in. I think that's, it's not necessarily dishonest, because, you know, you got to support your show and stuff somehow, but I prefer to promote things that I know I use and I find value in. So right now, I am reading and have been going through Mastering Bitcoin, the book by Andreas Antonopoulos, and you can find the link to get your own copy on Amazon and his affiliate link. So you'll be helping out Andreas Antonopoulos, and you'll be sending a couple of bucks my way just by buying that book through that link. You can find that all on cryptoeconomy.life. So if you would like to support the show and you do not have your copy of Mastering Bitcoin, jump up on the website and get it through that link there. All right, guys. And of course, if you have not gotten your Trezor hardware wallet, I have an affiliate link for that as well that I always post in the show notes. So definitely get your Trezor hardware wallet through that link as well. Again, same as Mastering Bitcoin. It doesn't cost you a dime, but it does send a couple of bucks to help out the Crypto Economy podcast. All right, that'll do it. I will see you all back here with another episode of the Crypto Economy podcast tomorrow. Take it easy, everybody.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.